From the very top.
This one.
Yeah. And that one, yeah. And how do we do this slideshow thing?
It's right there.
Thank you.
You want me to run this for you?
No, I can manage. Good morning, board, members of the public. I'm Holly Lundborg. I've been asked to address the microphone, so I'm not going to look at you. So please don't think I'm turning my shoulder to you, but I'm going to be speaking straight ahead.
Watch this.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Oh, he's such a problem solver. I'd like to introduce some of your staff, David Leland, division chief and IE and IT tech expert. Okay, again, good afternoon, good morning, board and members of the public. I'm Holly Lundborg, senior environmental scientist in the lead in your planning staff. Today I am going to present the workshop item number 9, workshop on the proposed amendment to the water quality control plan for the North Coast region to update water quality objectives. I'll be referring to this basin plan amendment as the water quality objective update amendment. First of all, I'd like to just briefly run you through your agenda package. It consists of the Green Executive Officer Summary Report, which is a condensation of our basically 100-page staff report. Attached to that, in cantaloupe color, you'll find the public notice for today. Also included for the reader's convenience is a copy of the staff report in white. And appended to the staff report in various shades of cantaloupe, yellow, and blue are the appendices of the that include the proposed revisions to the Basin Plan Amendment itself. Appendix 1, presented in strikeout underline version, is the proposed revisions to Chapter 3, the Water Quality Objectives Amendment. Objectives Chapter. Appendix 4 is the strikeout underline of our proposed revisions to Chapter 4, the implementation plan, and presented at the end as Appendix 6 for the reader's convenience is a clean copy of the proposed revisions to the water quality objective. The highlighted versions are included in the package to inform the readers basically on the scope and extent of the revisions. And the clean copy aids in the actual understanding of the proposed amendment itself. Just as a reminder for those in the audience that would care to speak, there are speaker cards in the back of the audience, in the back of at the table at the end, at the back of the room. Please fill them out and give them to the staff at the side table. And I'd like to also take this opportunity to thank the technical board staff. This project would not have been possible without the very helpful input from Casey Ashley and Jim Tischler of your cleanup staff, Mona Doherty, Lisa Bernard, and Rachel from our core regulatory permitting staff have also weighed in. As you'll hear later in the presentation, this basin plan amendment was brought to basin planning's priority based on the comments from cleanups and core reg over the past decade. That wasn't work, right? Somehow I did this backwards. And I'm at the end of my presentation here. I might need you again. I don't know. I think I might have hit end instead of down.
Yeah, why don't you just try down?
Thank you. Gosh, I don't know what I'd do without you. Today's workshop, I'm going to provide an overview of the goals of the Basin Plan Amendment and introduce to you the two-phase concept of this particular Basin Plan Amendment. I'll outline the development of this particular Basin Plan Amendment. I'll present a brief slide that indicates the framework of the Basin Plan Amendment or how it intersects with the Basin Plan itself. I'll spend the focus of this workshop will be summarizing the proposed revisions to the Basin Plan Amendment. As I go through this, I will highlight the new language that staff is proposing since the November 11th workshop to bring that to your attention. I'll briefly introduce our Phase 2 Basin Plan Amendment, which we're referring to as the Groundwater Implementation Program Update. I will close with our proposed schedule and contact information. Damn it, I did it again. I might need you. I really apologize.
I think you do need him.
Yeah, I think we do need him. I think you've been elected to help me here. Next slide, please. Okay. I will apologize. I'm sorry. I'm usually a little more organized than this. But I know what I want to say to you. I'll just get it said. All right, this slide indicates the goal of this particular Basin Plan Amendment. It is to develop a comprehensive region-wide groundwater protection policy that builds on the existing regulatory and implementation programs that are existing in the Basin Plan and as part of our ongoing programs. To achieve this goal, staff is recommending this two-prong approach or two-phase approach. This first phase that we're discussing today is referred to as the Water Quality Objectives Update Amendment. It's going to result in revisions to both our surface and groundwater protection measures or objectives, and I'll explain the thought process for that in a minute. And phase two, where we're going to concentrate on chapter four, the implementation piece of our program, and I'll be referring to that very, very briefly at the end of this presentation. Next slide, please. The reason I've put this slide up, though it's a little bit redundant and I'm not going to spend much time talking about it, but I want to use this slide to articulate how we got to where we are. Since 1988 or thereabouts, cleanup staff has been asking for the development of the focus of basin planning staff to focus on enhancing our groundwater protection policy and program as it presented in the Basin Plan. To this end, cleanup staff has asked that a new groundwater toxicity objective modeled after our surface water objective and similar to the one in place in Region 5 be included in our Basin Plan. The cleanup's crew also asked for that an outdated table referred to as Table 3.2, which I won't spend time talking about right now, I'll give you the title later, that the outdated information in that be deleted because it was leading to animosity, conflict, and a lot of time wasted in communications between regional board staff and discharger. That led the deletion of Table 3.2 then led us to these two sub-bullets, which were because we were striking the language, we were striking the Table 3.2, we could no longer reference it in the existing objectives. So because that artifact of the way that was crafted, we then ended up revising a number of surface and groundwater objectives. Regional board staff at that time decided to do a little other cleanup work, and I'll present that in a minute as well. We also, and this is a new piece that came out since the November workshop, was the concept of developing a new general objective for drinking water supplies to replace Title 32. I'll discuss that in more detail. And the third step was to develop a policy that articulates the process used by both cleanup staff and core regulatory staff when narrative objectives are translated into numeric values or limits for use in their work products. Next slide, please. This slide presents very briefly the framework of the Water Quality Objective Update. As you can see, we're proposing both editorial and substantial revisions to both chapters 3 and 4. I will make a note that most of the editorial revisions that are pending for chapter 4 will be included in phase 2. Very, very few editorial amendments are being proposed as part of phase 1. So very briefly, and the staff report goes into much more detail about these editorial revisions, but very briefly, staff has elected to reformat and relocate the tables within the objective chapter for readability, moving them to the end so it doesn't disrupt the flow, to take the Trinity River site-specific temperature objectives, which were nestled in footnote 5 of table 3.1 and make a site-specific table at the end of the chapter be consistent with the format that we used when the site-specific DO objectives for the Klamath were adopted. We're going to recommend that the Chapter 4 be renamed to Implementation Policies and Action Plans to be more encompassing, and adding a new section header called Region-Wide Policies so that we would have a place to place the policy for the application of narrative water quality objectives. We're proposing to revise the schedules of compliance sections in both Chapters 3 and 4 to be consistent with the State Board's compliance schedule that was adopted in 2009 and to reference the policy for application of narrative water quality objectives that's in front of you for consideration. Other editorial revisions include such things as alphabetizing the water quality objectives so they're easier to find, introducing the section numbering system and header numbering system that were used in the editorial amendments to chapters 1 and 2, and some other very brief cleanup language, all again which is detailed in the staff report. So I went over these brief earlier. These are the four major portions of the groundwater objective revisions to chapter, I'm sorry, the major revisions to chapter 3 that we're proposing. They are the groundwater objective, deleting table 3.2, adding a new objective for municipal and domestic supplies, and revising the appropriate objectives. This groundwater, proposed groundwater toxicity objective, staff has felt for a very long time that the adoption of such an objective would enhance the protection of groundwater as a source of drinking water in the region. The proposed objective would provide that all water shall be maintained free of toxic substances in concentrations that produce detrimental physiological responses in humans or aquatic life. This objective would apply regardless of whether the toxicity is from single substance or interactive of multiple substances. As I stated earlier, this language is in use with a few very minor changes in the north, in the Central Valley region. Theirs is a surface and groundwater objective, so they refer to animals, plants, and aquatic life. Well, this is groundwater, so we made it specific to groundwater. So basically, it's the objective that's been in use for a number of decades in Central Valley and has not caused any controversy in terms of being able to use it as a regulatory tool. In the absence of this toxicity objective, staff has been relying on the chemical constituent policy, this chemical constituent objective, and in using other sources of their board authority, such as Water Code Section 13304 and state board policies, such as the anti-DEG and the sources of drinking water policy. Staff believes that the inclusion of this specific groundwater objective would, in fact, result in increased protection to the waters of the region. And for more information, I just would like to let you know that this is discussed in much greater detail on page 316 of the staff report. Next slide, please. I'm going to like to give you a little bit of background about table 3.2, whose title is Inorganic, Organic, and Fluoride Concentrations Not to be Exceeded in Domestic or Municipal Supplies. The constituent values contained in this table were first presented in the mid-1970s and were derived from the maximum contaminant levels that were in place in Title 22 at that time. Despite subsequent and major revisions to Title 22 since that time, the numbers in Table 3.2 are not reflective of the current regulations. In fact, some of the constituents that are included in our table are no longer in use. And, of course, many of the constituents that are used in our region are not included on the table. Just to put this into perspective, Table 3.2 includes a list of 10 inorganic constituents, yet 15 are inorganic chemical constituents are included on the list of the 126 priority pollutants that are included in the toxic rule implementation plan or the CTR-SIP. Ensuring that Table 3.2 was stayed current with all of the revisions in these competing regulations would require a vast amount of staff resources and board energy. So with that in mind, staff is proposing to delete Table 3.2 and replace it with both the new objective and a process that describes how we, in fact, to establish numeric numbers for use in permits, orders, and other board and staff actions. The table also is confusing in that it refers to domestic and water supplies, yet it contains a number of constituents. Those constituents can also affect aquatic life. There's a footnote in Table 3.2, footnote 2, that states that other more stringent values may apply, and that's in situations where the domestic water supply is not the most sensitive use. So it's been confusing for folks. And so to alleviate that, both cleanup and core reg staff have asked us to do away with the table, provide more clear and transparent policy on how they do business, and I think that's all. So this, I realize you'll have a very tough time reading. This is the biggest change since I came before you in November. And this is a new general objective. And by general objective, we mean it refers to both ground and surface water. And this objective will be potentially titled Minimum Chemical Constituent Levels for Municipal and Domestic Water Supplies. This is an outgrowth of both some conversation that we had at the board meeting at the workshop in November, and as well as a meeting that staff had with US EPA. US EPA was a little uncomfortable with deleting Table 3.2 without being able to go back and saying each and every one of the numbers that were being deleted from that table were captured in another objective. So you'll see in front of you here, this table has a number of sub-bullets. One is for inorganic chemicals, one is for organic, and some are for inorganic chemicals, some are for organic chemicals. So this is basically to let the users and the regulatory community know that when there are domestic or municipal water supplies present, at a minimum, these Title 22 requirements will come in place. We've had very little public feedback on this amendment, proposed amendment at this time. Public comment remains open until the 29th of this month. We have, however, been given the suggested that we add another statement to this objective, clarifying the fact that this is, in fact, a minimum, that other levels may apply, and helping direct the reader to figuring out whether those other situations may apply to them. That's still in the works. I haven't yet had a chance to pull the team together and talk about that, but we'll certainly consider that, and when we come before you the next time, we'll have some resolution on that. Thank you. All right, this slide is an example of the proposed revisions to some of the existing language, and I'm using it to highlight a couple of important pieces. I've in red and in strike through is the language that we're proposing to delete, and in bolded black is the language we're proposing to add. As you can see, we're proposing to delete the phrase waters designated for use. And this is because state and federal law requires that we protect all existing beneficial uses, regardless of whether or not that water body has been designated in the basin plan as a municipal or domestic water supply. In fact, just as a little side note, we have had on our triennial review the need to update our beneficial use table 3.2 for about 10 years. So it's obvious that staff and the board acknowledges that is not as encompassing as it needs to be. Bottom line is, the board's responsibility and staff's responsibility to ensure is that all waters that support municipal and domestic water supply will meet the minimum constituents for municipal and domestic water supplies. So there's two things here. We're cleaning up the language designated for use. We're removing the outdated information from Title 22. Those are no longer Tables 2 and 3. They now have new table numbers, and we're also deleting the reference to Table 3.2. So this is just an example of the kind of changes that are outgrowths of the development of the major prongs of this Basin Plan Amendment. Next slide, please. This slide is indicating that staff's, one of the major intents of this policy and the thing that probably took us the longest to grapple with, was to develop a policy that clarifies the process that staff is currently using or similar steps that the staff is currently using when we translate narrative objectives into numeric values for use in permits, orders, and other board actions. The policy is titled The Policy for the Application of Narrative Water Quality Objectives. Next slide. This is a little slide that just indicates the flow that staff uses that I just described. You go through, you figure out their narrative objectives. EPA requires that we have some sort of policy in place that translates or makes transparent how we articulate a narrative objective into a narrative objective into a numeric limit in a permit, an order, a monitoring reporting program, or some other board directive. I'd like to take this opportunity to just let you know there's a discussion on page, I believe, 4.4 of our staff report that talks about this policy in respect to the process that staff uses when they develop their integrated report for use in the 303D listing, and it's not our intent that the policy be used for that at this point. Not to say that you can't decide to make this policy be broader in the future for other requirements, but right now we're using it. Our intent is to use it in these three broad categories. This is a slide I presented last time. This is a slide that comes right out of a compilation of water quality goals. It was developed a while ago by a staff scientist at Central Valley Region, John Marshak. It was housed at the Regional 5 website for quite a long time. Marshak has now gone to work at the State Board. This has now become a State Board document. It lives on the State Board website, and they've made a commitment to maintaining it and keeping it up to date. It's hard to see this, but what I wanted to be able to do was to show you how our proposed policy, the actual write-up that we have, how it intersects with this policy. The first thing that staff does is we determine which body of water may be affected by the discharge. The second step is to determine which of the existing water quality objectives that will protect those beneficial uses. And you can see from the side, those steps pretty much come from our basin plans and from site and from staff's site-specific knowledge of that water body. Once those determinations have been made, staff goes to the basin plan and selects the appropriate numeric objectives, straightforward. Staff then goes to the basin plan and digs out all the applicable narrative water quality objectives. That's where it gets a little more complicated, and I have shown a couple of these bullets as step five, but it's sort of where you draw the line. Once staff has determined which are the appropriate narrative water quality objectives, staff goes to the literature, and that's in large part contained in this compilation of water quality goals, and determines the level that they feel is the most, well, first of all, they determine what the whole suite of levels are, determine what those levels are and what the impact is. From that suite of data, then a number is selected. And it's the most limiting number that protects the most sensitive beneficial use. So if drinking water supplies the most sensitive beneficial use, that number is selected. If not, an aquatic life number is selected. Or step six, finally, we take into account, staff takes into account, anti-dag and natural sources. So for example, if you have a, if you're on a groundwater site that has naturally high in a particular constituent, board staff and board policy would not be to have you cleaning it up below that natural constituent, even if there was a level out there that was protective of a resource. Staff would determine it wasn't appropriate based on site-specific information. So there's information comes from the basin plan, comes from staff's knowledge, it comes from the literature, and it comes from, again, a site-specific understanding of the interaction between the discharge and your policy. So one of the things I think that is very important about this particular policy is if and when staff and a discharger or staff and the board have a disagreement about the establishment of any kind of numeric limit, we can go back to this stepwise process and help determine where our disconnect is. And I think it'll just move the conversation forward in a really efficient manner. This last slide is a remnant from the last presentation, and I use it just to highlight the idea that the basin plan table 3.2 values are either accurate, they're high, they're low, they're incomplete, that they're either in concert with Title 22 or they're orders of magnitude lower than CTR. And you can see by this table that if you were a good faith user coming to our basin plan, you opened up table 3.2, you looked at these numbers, you didn't really realize what footnote 2 was implying, you might be led down a path that you might not otherwise go. So with that, I will move to the next slide, which is just to remind you of where we've been and where we intend to go. We began CEQA scoping on this document in July of 2010. I held a workshop for you introducing it in November of 2011. We released the staff report and the draft basin plan amendment language in February of 2012. We'll be keeping the public comment period open until 2 weeks after this meeting in the hopes of getting well-informed and thoughtful comments. And based on the level of public comment and interaction we have, we'll be bringing this back to you for your consideration at either the April or June meeting. One more. That's okay. I had one slide that was just showing the tentative schedule for phase two, the groundwater implementation policy, right there. We're hoping to go out to CEQA scoping in mid-2012. Outreach workshops, educational opportunities will be ongoing, and we hope to bring this to you for your consideration in late 2013, early 2014. Concluding slide is a reminder to please sign up for our Basin Planning LIRIS electronic mailing system distribution list. It's how we're getting our updates and our information out. We have a website posted here with all the documents that are presented at the workshops are posted and housed on. And staff contact, Lauren Clyde, who cannot be here today, her contact information is provided as well. With that, I am closing my presentation, and I'm willing to take questions or comments.
Made it through with the good efforts of Mr. Leland as your wingman. Nice job.
Thank you, David.
Important number question, Mr.
Yeah, I have one. Yeah, thanks, Holly. Going through this, there seemed to be a lot of just really good, clean changes, and I think it improves not only the readability, but they seem fairly common sense, so it's a nice improvement. The only question I had, just on the technical side, was in the revision to the temperature objective, specifically for the Trinity River,
uh-huh.
on the very last page of Appendix C, I'm just curious if you know or if you could check to make sure that the recommendations or the criteria are consistent with the record of decision in the TMDL.
And if they're not?
We should try to make them.
We'll put it
or,
on.
Yeah, well, if not, we should explore, you know, with where these came from and if they're different and why. I
will do some history. I think they are, but
I'm guessing that they are, but I think it's just worth a double check.
I will do that for you and come
Great.
Back next time with an answer.
Thanks.
You bet.
The board member questions.
Just on, and maybe the best way to do it is out of the board meeting and walk me through it, but on the groundwater, first of all, I'm really glad you're doing that. I want to give you encouragement to do that. The way it was worded comes close to changing the burden of proof, and so how the narrative translates that into objectives is really critical. And I think given the huge chart you had, maybe the easiest way is I'll meet with you and you can walk through, okay, here's groundwater and here's exactly how it fits into this chart. And I think that can cure the problem, but I just want a red flag that we don't want to be in a situation in a very complex groundwater basin of having to prove an adverse effect before you can take action. And so I think the narratives, if they become a set of objectives that are clear and reasonable, then that's a way to get, and where the presumption is that if you violate the narrative that it is adverse, then that solves that problem. But the way it's worded, it's a little unclear, and I just wanted to walk through to make sure that the good language in there has good effect, I guess, basically.
Thank you. I'd like to make sure it's very clear, very transparent. So I would appreciate the opportunity to meet with you on that.
Other board member question?
Mr.
Manson.
Holly, the comment period doesn't close until the end of the month. Do we have, and it opened on the 3rd of February, I believe, do we have a lot of participation in this, or is this something that just is either above or below people's radar?
Putting me on the spot, aren't you? We've not had a lot of active engagement to date, but as you well know, we tend to get our public comments at the 11th hour. We've done some outreach. I really do think that staff has done a really good job of making it clear to the public, as we've been working with them, that very, very, nothing is really changing in the way we're doing business. This is a way of just clarifying and making transparent the way staff is already conducting business. So it's.
Thank you.
Holly, I got a question for you. I expressed concern to you at the previous workshop about the use of water quality objectives out there that are numeric. I think it's very good, by the way, to revise or actually hit the delete button on 3.2. Table 3.2 is just old and outdated, and it just needs to go away. At the same time, moving towards the new frontier, using this policy specifically for groundwater, because my sense is that Core Regulatory pretty much uses at least some tools. They have some tools and some working ways to deal with this, I think that probably have some more familiarity. But going into the realm of groundwater and using numeric objectives, I still, you know, I mean, I've used MARSHAC, and MARSHAC's a compilation of just the whole universe of water quality objectives out there based on almost everything. And it's a gigantic compendium, and it's very, very useful. And you described then a process to establish the numeric limits that apply. And as it moves into the realm of groundwater, I agree with Mr. Corbett that, you know, the new frontier of having this policy affecting groundwater objectives is going to be very interesting. And I'm interested in still the process of how then numeric limits are derived and chosen as being an appropriate numeric limit. And also I'm interested in the process by which that happens so that it's consistent across applications so that, because to me, again, this is a new realm for groundwater. Say the cleanups unit uses this, and that's a world that I work in. Title 22 has a very small range of constituents. It
have been in Title 22 for many, many years, and when you start looking at a cleanup site, you just don't have many numeric limits in there. But when you go to Marshak, you find them, and they're based on just absolutely everything, including cancer risk, including aquatic, including water quality objectives. There's just all kinds of stuff in there. So I'm still interested in how these numbers are chosen in a consistent manner that applies to a beneficial use criteria and how that process works. And maybe that's in the second step more of this thing as it goes more towards the Chapter 4, perhaps. But I think that's a very important piece that needs to be well thought and justified. So if it does get written into, say, a monitoring reporting program or a permit out there, that it's a solid number, it's justified, so that it's not just a pick number that we pick the lowest one. I would like to have that type of clarity on the front end, because, and then as this goes forward in use and practice, then I think establishing that now would pay dividends in the application of the policy. This policy, and I very much appreciate the power of the basin plan and the amending then of the basin plan. And this is a significant amendment that has real power and real effect in use, and especially I think more towards, in my mind, in groundwater than does, say, core regulatory, which I think is more versed maybe, and I look at Lisa because, you know, you work in this, Lisa, with the OTW permits, but groundwater is going to be a new application of this. And I think it's going to be an interesting application of this when you start looking at cleanups.
Well, I think I need to clarify. From my understanding, and I'm pretty sure I'm correct in this, when I worked with Christine Wright Shacklett and Casey Ashley and Jim Tischler, they were big proponent leads actively engaged in the development of the policy. And we pulled them in early on because obviously they needed it, making sure that it was in fact representing the thought process that staff uses to determine a level. So I'm not sure that it's new ground. I don't think I would characterize it as that. I think it's a new expression of the way we have been, it's the way staff has been undertaking their work.
Well, and maybe let me put it another way. It brings consistency, I think. I think this policy then, I think, by the way, that staff, in my experience of working with regional board staff on cleanup sites for the past 15 years, has applied water quality objectives out there using these other information sources. However, this makes it explicit that that is going to be the process, right, that it's not just Title 22, that there is a broad universe of water quality objectives that are out there that could be applied based on a criterion of policy. So as a clarification, I think this brings consistency in the use of tools and process.
I think it's very
powerful as a result.
Yeah, I thank you for phrasing it that way, and I did mean to say that. This really is a way of putting in paper the way staff utilizes their best professional judgment. It's
yes.
A way of us then being able to come back together and saying, I agree, I disagree to this point. So I do think it's a clarifying process. So, thank you.
Okay. And Ms. Coleman.
Suggestion, one thing that we had talked about internally is when, particularly for in the cleanups world, when I sign monitoring and reporting requirements to dischargers, that we would include in that cover letter an explanation of how we derived the numbers, making it even clearer that not only would there be this policy, but then why we chose the numbers that we chose would be documented in the cover letter of the MRP. And Casey said she was going to start implementing that right away.
Yeah, and I think that is an outcome and a growth of this. I think the use of tools that are explicitly allowed by this amendment, which is a very powerful thing again, I think, to use those, and I think that works very well. I think it makes it a much more well-rounded and defensible use of regulatory authority than to do what you're trying to do, which is to protect water quality and in cleanups, restore water quality. It becomes a cleanup objective out there. And I think that's a very good thing. And I think by the way, it makes staff better. I think it makes the process as an agency more defensible, less maybe, I'm not saying it was arbitrary, but the appearance of just picking a number, that then that number is chosen based on a criteria, it's an explicit criteria, here's what we did, here's why we're applying this. And I think that's very good. I like this amendment. I think it's a very good amendment. And I applaud your work on it, you and your staff.
Thank you.
Mr. Carby, did you have anything that you wanted to say?
No, I said it.
Sure. Is there any other, I have no speaker cards on this. Is there any questions, comments, any other board member comments on this? This is an information item, so this will be back. Okay?
Correct.
Okay. Well, thank you again. We are going to adjourn for closed session. We will be back at 1:15. Does that work, Kat? Okay, we'll be back at 1:15. We will take on at that time a workshop for the Elk Watershed. All right, we'll see you at 1:15.